Hey, it's Lori from Hike. So this episode, I bring you Ryan Bunting. His trail name is Constantine. He has not only done the Triple Crown, but he has hiked 7 of the 11 National Scenic Trails, and his goal is to complete all 11. Beyond that, he has a wealth of other trail experience as well. We'll talk a little bit about his GDT hike earlier this year in Canada, and the journey he's taken from starting the Appalachian Trail in 2015 to having his own company, 11 Skies, today. So take a listen to my conversation with Ryan. So I'm here with Ryan Bunting today. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me on, Lori. I've been listening to your podcast and love having more hiking podcasts out there.
Thank you. I'm glad you're a listener and was excited when you reached out to me and wanted to share your story. So I'm looking forward to sharing with listeners more about you and learning more.
Yeah, definitely.
Tell me more about yourself, about kind of what's your background. Where are you at, by the way?
I am actually in Canada right now. Okay. I am in British Columbia, Pemberton. So that's kind of a full story within itself. This year, as everybody knows, kind of plans got thrown for a huge loop. And my partner is from Canada, and we had planned on doing the GDT, and we were able to still do the GDT this year, but kind of COVID prompted a decision to be made before it got really, really strict for the border crossings. And back in May, it was either end of April or beginning of May, we had to make a decision about, okay, I need to either come up now or we have to restructure this somehow. So I'm actually in Pemberton, BC right now. Yeah, it's beautiful up here. So we've gotten a lot of Canadian hiking in this year. And Canadian hiking is a different beast. It truly is. Compared to, there's a lot of support around the long distance trails in the US, and Canadian hiking, it's growing, but that's exactly what it is. It's growing right now, and the trails reflect that growth.
Now, I think it's interesting that you say you're mentioning about wanting to do the GDT. You know, I've had a couple people on, Dan and T. Durston, who mm-hmm. have a lot of experience on the GDT. And yeah, it just sounds like what an amazing trail to cut your teeth on. So
it is a beautiful trail. When we did it, we started June 12th, which is very, very early for the GDT, extremely early. And we knew going into it, we were going to have very high snowpack and potential avalanche conditions in a lot of the area. And so we prepped for that. What we did not prepare for was the record rain in a lot of the areas. And that led to a whole new problem of fording rivers. It is a full wilderness experience. I mean, when you go out there, in the regular season, you're still going to have that wilderness aspect to it. But in a season with high snowpack and really, really extremely high levels of rain, it's just a completely different beast. There's nothing really you can compare that trail to, at least when we experienced it. Every time somebody's going to experience it differently, but we have no comparison.
So did you do the entire trail in June then?
So we did. It was June 12th to July 18th. It took us longer than we anticipated. We wanted to initially go out there and set a speed record, but we quickly found out within the first 3 days that was not going to happen. I mean, we're both capable and we're both very comfortable of doing 30s to 35s. That's kind of our sweet spot with miles. And the second day we were there, we did 7 miles all day. It was just so slow.
So were you going like northbound, southbound?
So we were going northbound. We started in Waterton Lakes at the Canadian-US border, and we went northbound up to Kakwa Lakes, which is the northern terminus. And you end at this little cabin in kind of the middle of the woods. And that cabin, while being the northern terminus, is not the end of how you need to get out of that trail system. You still have 60 plus miles of, they call it road walking, but this dirt road with the river conditions this year, the river ate into the dirt road. So it even flooded it more. And that 60 miles out was another big part of the adventure.
I'll pause right here, though. Obviously, you are a seasoned hiker. You know, you didn't go into this, you know, brand new. So let's kind of talk a little bit about your history and how you started into this, you know, long distance hiking life.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry, I skipped ahead. I tend to get into stories and then go with it.
Well, but, I don't want people thinking that, you know, you can just go out there to the GDT and just, you know, just immerse yourself. No. You've got to be prepared. So let's see how did you get there?
Okay. So today, actually, while we're doing this interview, it is actually my 5-year anniversary of when I summited Katahdin. My first
happy trailiversary.
Thank you. Thank you. So that was, this date has been in my head for a while. It's been very special. So before I start going into all that, but yeah, the AT was my first through hike. I did it back when I was 22. I'm 26 now, so about 5 years ago. And what really got me into it was I've always been passionate about sports and activities that kind of involve you fully. So I was really, really big into hockey when I was younger. And I thought that was going to be my life path for a long time. And when I was 18, I had a really bad injury that I couldn't walk for 8 months afterwards. That they literally put me in a straight cast and I couldn't bend my leg for 8 months. So after that, that took away a big part of my identity, kind of losing that because that had been my life for so long. So knowing I missed that kind of peak spot when people are 17 and 18, they're starting to go into junior hockey and that's when people are really starting to pick up. I knew I missed that. So I went to school. I did kind of the cookie cutter lifestyle for a long time. And when I turned 21, I had been doing a little bit of section hikes on the AT with my free time. And I found out it was a journey that I could fully do. So once I got out of school, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go do this before I get into the workforce and kind of, yeah, it's going to be the step A, step B, step C kind of lifestyle. And I did the AT and I thought it was just going to be a journey, but it turned into a lifestyle for me.
So you talked about doing some section hikes on the AT. Were you out on the East Coast? Was it easy to get to the AT?
Yeah, so I'm originally from South Carolina. So that's also where I went to school, the College of Charleston. So the AT was kind of the closest kind of trail system that you could go out for multiple nights. South Carolina has smaller trail systems. I mean, they have the Palmetto Trail now, but I don't think back then it was a big thing. So that was kind of the 5 or 6 hour drive to get there up to the North Carolina mountains, or you could go to Georgia. So the AT was the most accessible for me.
Okay. So you graduated, when you started the AT, were you doing it with other people? Was it solo?
A little bit of both. Yes, a little bit of both. I did it with a couple buddies, and one of my first section hikes, we packed it from Irwin. We were going southbound to Hot Springs. So it's that kind of Tennessee, North Carolina section there. And I remember packing out 6 blocks of cheddar cheese, like 2-pound blocks apiece. Because we thought we were going to just...
What were you going to do with all that cheese?
I know. And within the first half mile, I'm like, I have too many blocks of cheese. So we packed out like 6 blocks of cheese and maybe ate half a block of cheese. So a lot of mistakes were made within those section hikes. Even leading up to the through hike, I was still making mistakes. You go out there and you learn while you're out there. So the section hikes, big learning curve. The first through hike, big learning curve. And the AT, yeah, it kind of has a special place for me because it was where I kind of cut my teeth with the section hikes and then the first through hike. I think it's a beautiful trail for a first through hike for people that want to experience the trail culture, experience what hiking is about. And it just has such a big community around it that it's a great trail.
Did you start early? Did you start March, April?
So I start, funny enough, one of the shortest trails I've done, I started March 24th and of course finished September 30th. So it took me 6 months and 6 days because we called our hiking family, our trail family, the Turtle Squad, because our goal was to be last one to Katahdin wins. That was kind of the catchphrase out there.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, okay, if we get there last, we got to experience it the most. We had to get the most out of it. So we really took
it. But doesn't Baxter at some point kind of, maybe it's not technically shut down, but they're kind of shut down?
So October 15th.
Okay. So you got there a couple of weeks ahead, but how was the weather at that point? What, you know, was it starting to get cold at night? Were you starting to kind of say, okay, I'm ready for it to be over?
Yeah, it was starting to get cold. It was the 100-mile wilderness. I remember waking up shivering many times because my gear hadn't been dialed in correctly yet. I was still kind of wearing the cotton shirts. I had base layers, but I wasn't layering correctly. And I was very cold. I was very cold leading up that last week, week and a half to Katahdin. And then summiting, it was freezing cold that morning before. But once we got up to the summit, the sun had come out and it was a beautiful summit day.
So you said, you know, you had before the AT, you had, you know, the plan of A, B, and C, you know, basically I'll do the AT, then I'll get that corporate job, you know, and do all the normal things that people expect in life. So how soon after you got off trail did you say, okay, I'm going to do another trail?
It took a while because the AT really broke my knees down. And from having a knee injury, I didn't think I wanted to do another trail system. Honestly, for when I summited, I had loved that journey. I'd loved everything that it had given me and provided and just being a mesh within that community. But it took about 2 or 3 weeks off of the AT for me to start looking and being like, okay, I really, really miss it. I had found out when I came off the AT that this is going to be kind of a cliche, but it really did change me. When I came off of the AT, I had a different perspective on what life could look like. It didn't have to be that A, B, and C. And coming off that trail and almost instantly going back into work, I started working. I'm like, this is going to be my life for 20, 30 more years. And I'm like, I'm going to have to do another trail system. And that kind of led into the next trail system and then just kept steamrolling from there.
How many of the National Scenic Trails have you done then?
I have done 7 of them now.
Wow. And how many are there? Is it 11?
There are 11. 11. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I did remember that fact. Yeah. So 7. I mean, that's so, okay. So let's kind of put this in perspective. You got off the AT. Did you then go do the PCT next? Was that, yeah.
So yeah, it was once again, kind of the classic steps for a lot of people that do the AT first. That PCT, it's been talked about on trail. It's been in their minds and it was just, it was the next step. So PCT was 2017.
And so what did you feel like was different about doing the PCT now that you had the AT under your belt?
I was still learning on the PCT, to be honest. I still had too much gear. I still had an Osprey pack. And the difference in that is I started that trail with a buddy from real life, kind of a working friend. And I found, this is, can be personal preference once again, but for long distance trails, like a lot of people kind of have this inner worry, it seems like, that what I've heard in the hiking community, that they're going to go out there and they're going to be completely by themselves. Not so much AT, PCT, but these other trail systems. And I found starting with somebody that you know from your previous life, you might not mesh together well with your hiking style. You might want to do lesser miles. You might want to do more town stops. And we're still good friends to this day, but our hiking style didn't mesh and it made that trail system a little harder.
I think that's a good point because, and this was, I was just talking to someone last night about this, your hiking partners. I mean, that is probably, I don't think really we talk about it so much. I mean, I don't hear people talk about it so much, but there is a lot that goes into having synergy with another person, especially if it's someone from, like you said, you considered your like real life or, you know, work life. And, and there's this dichotomy of trail versus non-trail of even your personality can be different. So what are your thoughts on that?
I always love hiking with people. I mean, a lot of people love the solitude of trail. I really find beauty in that as well. But hiking with people is kind of what initially really brought me into the hiking community, is just the trail families that you make and even the trail families outside your immediate trail family and just the entire community. Hiking with people, it makes the tough days easier and it makes the easier days great. I mean, it is just, once you find that person that you mesh with the miles, you push each other a little bit on trail to maybe go farther, or you take a break spot with a great friend, and you just, it makes every experience on trail just so much better. And finding that right person or that right trail family, it just comes naturally. It's not something that you have to go out there and look for. When you're on trail, people that tend to do your same miles or have the same personality as you, or all this stuff kind of meshes together and becomes one on trail, and you just, you wander into it. And it's an amazing thing. It's the trail provides, and I have always loved hiking with a trail crew, and I've done trails without a trail family, and not my favorite experiences.
Yeah. Well, and a misconception I think out there for someone who may not have done long distance hiking is you're not going to be like walking side by side with those people all day long. You know, you're doing your miles, you're meeting up, you know, at a lunch spot, at the camp spot and things like that. So there is a different type of hiking partner than you might do on like a day hike or a section hike where you're kind of staying, you know, aligned to that person and to their cadence. So a little bit different.
Yeah. And it's also, I think it ties into skill level too. Like if you, once you become more conscious and more aware of your surroundings and you kind of learn the skills necessary, I think a lot of worries tied into, you have to be walking close to that person, because especially on the AT, I saw a lot of that. Like when people would be hiking, they'd be hiking together, literally together all day. And yeah, when you're hiking together with a partner, it can take any shape. You can, within any given day, I mean, even an example, I've had buddies I've hiked with 2 hours out of the day, and then we kind of split up, and then I've had buddies I've hiked with all day, but it's not day after day after day. It's kind of what you feel within that day is like, oh, maybe I wanted some time to just open up the pace, open up the legs, and I'll meet you at this lunch spot. Or it's like, oh, the morning is really pleasant, we're having a great conversation, let's do a couple miles together. So it's all of that together that kind of builds into it.
When you were mentioning too, then on the PCT, you started out with your friend. Did he continue on?
We finished together, yeah.
You did finish together. Okay. I just wondered if he finished. Okay. So both of you still finished together. So,
and it was his first, it was his first long distance hike of kind of any variety. And it was still a learning curve for me, but it was a big learning curve for him. And it was an experience.
And your trail name is Constantine, right?
Yes.
So how did you get your trail name? Was that on the AT or before the AT even?
Oh, no. No, I'm glad I didn't get it before the AT. I don't know how that would have happened, but yeah, it was on the AT. So the first week in Georgia, we had rain all day, every day, the first week in Georgia. And I get to the shelter, actually the first shelter outside of Georgia, Muskrat Creek shelter, kind of on the North Carolina-Georgia line. And I'm just soaked. I'm shivering. I'm freezing. And I get there. The shelter's filled. So I set up my tent, come back into the shelter for some food. And I had a bottle of hot sauce duct taped to my trekking poles. I know it's okay. It's unique. So I loved hot sauce, and I didn't want to carry the glass bottle. So I was,
you didn't want to lose it, obviously.
Yeah. Still learning at that point. So I made some ramen, put some hot sauce in, and it stopped my shivering. So people wanted to give me the name Icy Hot because I walked into the shelter shivering. Okay. And after the hot sauce, I was not shivering.
Yeah.
So the next day I'm hiking with a buddy and I gave him the trail name Casper. And he's like, man, Icy Hot's a great name, but it's too much of a mouthful. So we're walking along and he's like, have you ever seen the movie Constantine? And I'm like, no, I haven't. He's like, you remind me of the main character, Keanu Reeves. I'm like, oh, why? Because in Georgia, that first week, I was cussing at every single uphill and I was praising every single downhill. So he's like, you're like half good, half evil, like the main character. I'm like, oh, okay. And just stuck from there.
Okay. I think it's much better than Icy Hot.
Thank you. Yeah, Icy Hot's too much of a mouthful. Constantine's kind of, it just kind of rolls off the tongue. It's still a big word, but it rolls off a little bit.
Okay. So the PCT, you said you were still learning, you're still trying to find, you know, what gear to use and what, you know, worked and didn't work. When you got to the terminus, what were your next thoughts? I mean, were you kind of like, okay, well, I've got to do the Triple Crown?
So we got to the terminus before completing our hike because we had to flip that year.
Okay.
Because of year of ice and fire. So when I got to the terminus, I'm just like, I have more hiking. But when we completed the rest of the hike that year, I don't know. I knew I was going to do the CDT. I didn't know if it was going to be that year directly after, because I knew going to have to go back to work, going to have to save up again and all of that. But it had become ingrained in me enough at that point that within, once again, that week or two window off the trail, I was craving it so much again. And that's when it solidified of, okay, I'm going to do what I need to do this off season to be able to go back out and do the CDT.
So you did the CDT, was it in 2018 then?
It was.
Okay. Yes. So, yeah. I mean, you just mentioned that you had to flip for the PCT. So where was your end?
So we flipped from Tahoe and then we went up to Washington, hit that. And then by the time we got to the Oregon border was completely on fire and we couldn't do the regular route in Oregon. So that pushed us to the OCT, which is the Oregon Coast Trail. And we had reached out to the PCTA saying, hey, is this an acceptable reroute? Because like pretty much all of Oregon's closed. Like we could do highway road walking, but not all of Oregon. That's just too much. So they came back and said, yeah, it's an acceptable reroute. So that pushed us to the OCT. And that, once we got to, I forget what the town is called, but the town right at the border of Oregon and California, because we went southbound on it, that's where we completed that part of our hike as well.
And what did you think about the OCT?
I liked it. I wasn't in the mentality to enjoy it as fully, mm-hmm. because
you didn't want to do it, right? I mean, you wanted to do all the PCT. Yeah. So yeah, I can understand that. Plus it's not, I mean, you're going, there's town to town in a lot of those sections and not like a lot of great camping kind of spots things like that. You kind of have to think a little of, trying to find a spot to camp and the tides. And so it's a little bit of a logistical challenge sometimes.
It was. And the best information we had was a little guidebook. I'm pretty sure you interviewed the person who wrote the guidebook.
Oh, Bonnie. Yes.
Yeah. It's a great guidebook, but we must have not read it. Yeah, we must not have read the introduction, because it's built for day hikes, which is awesome. And you can kind of go down the list of day hikes, but it doesn't tell you about the 20-mile connector routes in between the day hikes, which is all road walk. So to do it as a through hike, we would get to the end of the guidebook. And it's like, okay, now you go to the next trailhead. And you're like, well, I don't see another trailhead. And then you would have to road walk to that next trailhead. But the OCT, it was a good trail. I still really enjoyed it. I just wasn't in the same mindset as if I picked that trail and said, I'm going out to through hike the OCT. It was just making the best of a situation that you really had to make the best of at that time. So I enjoyed it. I wish I would have been on the full PCT at that point.
Yeah. No, I get that. So in 2018, when you decided to do the CDT, were you doing northbound? Southbound?
I did northbound, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so all the big three, I always wanted to do northbound because I love hiking with trail families, and that's generally where you're going to get the most social aspect, is you're going to do a northbound, and that's where most people start.
So what are the highlights for you from the CDT? I guess stretches or things that really highlight what the CDT is about?
So Colorado, the San Juan Loop. So there is a low route called the Creed Cutoff that if it's super high snow year, you have to do. But fortunately, even though we got there early and it was still super high snow year, the crew I was hiking with, we were all committed of doing the regular route, the high route on the San Juans. And doing that route in that type of snow, I had done snow travel on the PCT, I'd done all of that, but the San Juans were something different. It was way more steep inclines than PCT Sierras. And those San Juans gave me an experience in snow travel that I'm really glad I have, because it brought me to the GDT this year, being comfortable in the uncomfortable situations.
So did you have an ice axe? Did you have what kind of gear did you have to help you?
So I'm generally a stubborn person. Uh-huh. So, okay. I think a lot of hikers have a baseline stubbornness, but I lean into it a lot of the time. And I had convinced myself after doing the Sierras on the PCT that I did it all without ice axes or micros. And it made me convinced I could do the San Juans without ice axes and micros. And I really wish I would have had it, so I didn't have micros or an ice axe. And it made each step sometimes very nerve wracking.
Okay. How many slip and slides did you have?
None.
None. Okay. Well, that's good then.
Because if you slip and if you had a slip and slide in some of these areas, it's not
coming out of it.
You're not going to pop back up. So it made me walk slower, but each footstep I knew for a fact that I wasn't going to go anywhere. So it gave me some good snow traveling experience and also pushed me into getting micros and an ice axe.
Okay. That's good to hear. Yes. What about at that point, you know, this is your third long trail. Tell me what the gear that you had on, you know, how your gear changed then, because at this point, you know, you definitely, you know, have a lot of miles on your boots.
Mm-hmm. So this year was the big change of the pack. I switched from Osprey to Hyperlite. I had done the both previous ones and what I called the turtle shell because it fully engulfed me of an Osprey pack. So I switched to a Hyperlite pack, and that really changed a lot because you had to put in only what you needed. So I also switched to a different sleeping bag, Western Mountaineering Versalite, because I was going into more extreme kind of terrain and more cold weather. So I switched to a Versalite, and the tent had stayed the same. I always use Big Agnes, and I had a Fly Creek on the AT, but switched to a Copper Spur Ultralight on the PCT and CDT. So it was kind of just tweaks with the big three at first. And then I've still been dialing in the electronics bag and the food system as well.
Okay. So tell me about the food.
Yeah. So the food, I tend to like to run into town super hungry. So I'll purposely pack out less than I know I'm going to need. So I like to do big Niros into town, and my hiking partners are always like, that's not a Niro if you're doing 20 miles into town. I'm like, no, we'll be able to get it done. I'll always pack out less food than I need. And it's bit me every so often. It's come up to not be comfortable, but a lot of the times, 90% of the time, it gives me that extra oomph to get into town a little bit sooner so I can resupply. And I've been able to dial in the food pretty well now.
So we were talking about food, and that made me think about, you know, hiking into the trail towns. And I wanted to know from the big three, you know, from the AT, PCT, and CDT, what were your favorite trail towns?
Oh, that's going to be a hard question.
Well, I'm not asking for the favorite.
Not the favorite.
But just, you know, what are some that were memorable to you?
So Carrotunk in Maine would have been very memorable for me because there's a little hostel there. I am not positive on the hostel's name, but it was just an amazing hostel, and the owner super friendly, and our hiking group had run into a hiker that we had met way back in Georgia and we hadn't seen since then, so it was kind of a reunion. So that was a very cool, it wasn't even a town, but it was like a hostel, and that was it.
Yeah,
but that was probably AT. PCT, I love Stehekin up in Washington. Little bakery, that's all you need. You had to take the bus in. It had a very Washington vibe to it. I love that. And then CDT, favorite trail town. Whew. Maybe Pinedale. It would probably be Pinedale because we had to come out of the Wind River Range and do the 15 miles extra on that side trail. And the hitch took us forever, and we were just so happy to be in a town. And Pinedale it's kind of a strip. Like, it has a main street, and besides that, it's not much town. But I love the smaller towns, and the smaller towns on the trails in 2019 I loved as well.
I like that you were mentioning ones that, yeah, aren't the ones you would think about, right? Like the very big, you know, popular kind of trail towns that you hear about.
Is for me personally, at least, the trail town, it's not so much the town, it's how you're feeling at that point or the experience that you had with your hiking family or hikers you met there. So the bigger trail towns, awesome experiences, but like those small ones, I love the small ones.
And what about trail magic and kind of the trail angel experience. How yeah. would you compare those among those three trails?
AT, just so saturated with trail magic. I mean, it's almost every, you hear it all the time, almost every road crossing. And from Georgia, awesome trail magic. North Carolina, great. Then that those middle states, Tennessee, Virginia, Maryland, it was more, not as much quantity, but more quality, if that makes sense. So like yeah. when you would have trail magic, it would be a bigger event. So AT, super saturated, but also amazing parts. PCT, really starting to pick up too. I mean, a lot of trail magic around there. And CDT, not so much. It's not the quantity again, but the quality. So the trail magic on the CDT was more, for us at least, everybody experiences it differently, but for us at least, the trail magic was getting a hitch in a tough spot. Like it took us like 3 hours to get into encampment one time. And that felt like trail magic that somebody finally pulled over, because there were like eight of us. So yeah, who's going to pull over?
You had to have someone with a pretty big pickup.
Yeah. So trail magic, it's I love the trail angels. It's more so the trail angels on the PCT, the Sotheby's and kind of Casa de Luna. That's always a big part in people's minds too. And I loved Casa de Luna. I love the Sotheby's. Really fun there. And trail magic just adds to the experience. And the trail angels, if they're listening, I just always want to say thank you. They're amazing people. And I mean, it makes these trails what they are.
So you did the Triple Crown. You finished in 2018. And then, you know, I mean, most people say, okay, did the three. Now it's going back to, you know, maybe now I go into the workforce or do this or that. So what happened to you after the CDT?
It actually more so happened on the CDT. So before I got off the CDT, I realized that this is a life that I'm extremely passionate about and that I wanted to find a way to make it continue working. And going into the work season off of the CDT, I knew I had a job. I've worked construction and vacation rental management for every single year I've been off. So I've always had two full-time jobs as soon as I get off trail, pretty much. Like I almost instantly go back into work so I can go do these trails. And it had felt like there was kind of a piecemeal, like there was a person on, there was a life on trail and there was a life on off trail. And the disconnect between the two, it had started to grow too much for me. Like I love working and I loved that part of my life, but I really, really was passionate about the trail and making that my year round life. And even if I wasn't hiking on trail, being part of the trail off trail, if that makes sense. So
I think it does.
Going into 2019, I got back into the work and grind, and I think it was 6 or 7 months. And then within those months, I figured out a couple trails I was going to do. And that kind of just led into this year. So it's kind of been going along with the journey and figuring it out as I go along. But I was done with having that piecemeal, and going into 2019, I was looking for a way to have that to stop being piecemealed.
So, you know, you got to a point where, like you said, you've done 7 of the 11 national scenic trails. So how did you get there?
So 2019 was a big year.
Yeah. I was like, well, wait a minute. We've got like 3.
Yeah.
How did you do those other 4?
2019 was a big year for me. I wanted to do the AZT starting off northbound in March or April, but my work schedule didn't align for that. So I ended up having to start hiking season in May. And the PNT was the big trail system after the AZT that I wanted to do that year. But I also wanted a smaller trail to break my legs in, because PNT, the Pacific Northwest Trail, is really big ups and downs. Like you're going straight up mountains, you're not riding the ridges. So I did the Pinhoti Trail to warm up for that trail, which is 340-ish miles. And then I connected it to Springer, which is another 60-ish. And that 400 miles warmed my legs up for the PNT. So I went out to the, I went out to the PNT. And I found a great hiking group out there that we really pushed the miles. We were doing very consistent 30s to 35s through very tough terrain, very strong hiking crew. I would love to shout out their names, Cy, Hardy, and Magpie, who is actually my partner. And I met my partner out on the PMT too, which is a beautiful thing. Somebody just as wacky with this life. But we did the PMT, and then we also, when we finished in August, we wanted more trail that year. And that August kind of September time window is a weird window. You have to find something that's not too far north, too far south, because if you go to the desert, it's kind of monsoon season. You don't want that. So we kind of all split off and kind of splintered back to our lives. Cy went somewhere, Hardy went somewhere, Magpie went somewhere, and I still wanted to hike. So I went to the Ice Age Trail out in Wisconsin.
Yes.
And Magpie dropped me off. And so I got out there and I knew my time window was short. So I said, let's see how far and how fast I can push this trail system. So I did the 1,200 miles in 37 days, which is the Ice Age Trail, which it was 3 or 4 Neros, but I was pushing pretty consistent, hovering around the 40-mile range. And that opened up the time window to go do the AZT. And we all got back together and we did the AZT that year as well.
Wow. So like roughly how many miles did you hike in 2019 then?
12, 24, 4, 28, 800, 3,600, I think.
Okay.
Give or take.
That's a lot of miles.
Yeah.
In 1 year.
I wanted more.
I wanted more.
But the season was coming to an end, so it was what it was.
So, and then it led into this year. So when you're in 2020, at the beginning of the year, kind of pre-COVID, what was on the docket?
So I went back to work again, but in a different context. So when I was on trail in 2019, all of those trails, I was in talks with this company that I had found before 2019 hiking season. And they were a very simplistic company. They didn't try to sell you anything. They just had their products out there somewhere. So I found this company. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try out their gear this year. And the pair of shorts I wore in 2019, I still have, with no rips, nothing got torn down. And I put them through absolutely everything I could put them through. I mean, bushwax on the PNT, glissading down stuff on the PNT, coarse sands in the desert. Everything I could put them through, I put them through. And that really inspired within me, knowing that I was trying to find a way to shift my two parts of my life and mesh them together. So I reached out to that company while I was on the trails that year and started getting into talks about maybe working for them, what that looked like, or it eventually evolved into that person wanted to sell their company and they were kind of done with it. So once I got off trail in 2019, in December, I flew out to Montana where the company was based out of and took a look at what that would look like to buy that company. And they made awesome gear, but their niche was not what I was looking for. They kind of specialized within the ski gear community for like vests and all that stuff. And they had great shorts, which is what brought me to them originally. And I was out there for a week and a half to learn the process, how it was built and everything. And within that week and a half, we kind of couldn't settle on what it looked like if I was to buy the company. And I didn't want to go away from that he didn't feel like he got something out of that, as well as both of us being happy with that kind of transaction. So I ended up buying the patterns for the shorts and the pants. And that kind of led into 2020. So I was working 2 full-time jobs while creating my company that I'm running right now. And that led into hiking season 2020 as well.
Okay. So tell me about those shorts and pants, because are they for women too, or just men?
Yeah, they are unisex right now.
While you were telling that story, I was thinking of how I ripped my pants on Blood Mountain.
Ooh.
And yeah. And so, you know, it's one of those things where, God, I want something durable. Starting a company, there's a lot that goes into it, but obviously this kind of niche and this company, what you were trying to do, it was a product you believed in that you used. Yep. And so starting 2020, as you're getting that up and rolling, I guess let's go from there. What happened?
Okay, so yeah, 2020, it was a long year. I mean, I was working those two full-time jobs while I was off, and then any spare time I had, which was not much, was going directly into that company. And there was a lot of trial and error because I did not want to change any part of that. I did not want to change any part of the design, any part of the material that went in. I wanted to keep it exactly as is because it did not fail me. And as you said, on your hikes, you've had shorts and pants disintegrate. And on the CDT that year, 2018, before I found this company, I went through 6 or 7 pairs of shorts. And it was just kind of too much for me. So yeah, 2020, building the company before hitting trails. And I also had 2020, I believe I had 5 trails planned for 2020. And
because he wanted to do more than last year.
Yes. And it was going to be another big year. It was because I wanted to put him product test way more environments. I mean, we product tested everywhere, a lot of the places already, but I kept wanting to product test and make sure they were the right fit. And I love hiking. So it was a two-tier thing. So 2020 had 5 trails planned, and then it kind of 2020 happened. I mean, everybody's plans got changed. So the 2 trails I was going to do in the beginning, out the window, they were in kind of hot spots, and I couldn't do them, didn't want to do something that wasn't appropriate for the hiking community as well as those places and what it would affect. So by May, I was able to find a trail system that was actually on my list that I could still do. And it was in an area that had very few cases, and those areas were starting to open back up. And I was going to do it with very limited impact, no hitchhiking, no association, like not touching anything, being very leave no trace about it, extremely leave no trace about it. So that led me into the Natchez Trace Trail, which I was able to run out in 14 days, which is 444 miles, right in there somewhere. And that goes from Mississippi to Alabama to Georgia.
Okay, because I think that's a trail that not a lot of people know, you know, a lot about. So you said it's in 3 states?
It is, yes.
And over 400 miles. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what was the terrain like?
Road
walking?
It was road. It's a national scenic trail because it's a corridor. So they designated that corridor as a national scenic trail, but it's mostly a byway and it's almost all road. So they have, out of that 444 miles, they have 60 miles of trail system. But
wow. So that's why you don't hear a lot about it.
Yes. Yeah. And to get to that trail system, you sometimes have to walk off the byway into the trail system. That puts you like 3 miles away from the route that you have to come back to. And the trail systems there, I think it had a lot happening. So there was a lot of blowdowns when I went through and a lot of maintenance that needed to happen. But I think that had been postponed because we were coming right out of the big peak of COVID. So that's probably why you don't hear a lot about it. The camping is not built for hikers as much either. You have to do very close to 40-mile days to even get to a quote-unquote campground. A lot of it, you have to do stealth camping. And it's a national park, so there's rangers that patrol the corridor as well. So I would be walking the road, and I'd be talking to the rangers, and met the friendliest ranger in the world out there. And he's like, "We don't see many people like you out here doing this." I'm like, "Yeah, it was a national trail. I had to do it." So it's built for bike packing, but it's still a national scenic trail. So I went out there and did it.
And then when you came back, what was next?
So coming back from that was right after that, had other trails planned, but big part of it was getting across the border into Canada with my partner, who's Canada.
How did you do that?
There's within those parameters, those health and safety laws, it was getting into the right metric in there. And the border patrol at first tried to turn me around for 2 hours. Like, I was the last person in the airport. Like, I went through so many checkpoints until the final checkpoint. And the final checkpoint, they turned around like everybody else in the room. And the border guard, I had paperwork signed because we share a home. So we have a lease together with the home. I had that paperwork signed. I showed that we had done everything necessary to fall underneath those health and safety issues. And so he's like, I don't think we can let you in. And I'm like, please, man. I mean, she's outside in the van right now. So he checked with the supervisor, came back, said still no. And it was just a lot of like showing I had done my research and I had fallen within every single parameter. Like I had a full booklet of paperwork that showed this is a necessity, and he had to keep going back and forth. And eventually you could see there was like a shift in his eyes that he's like, okay, I understand that you actually know what you're talking about, know what you're doing, that this is a move for you and it's a cohabitation.
Yeah, so, that you're not just heading up for a 3-week vacation.
I think a lot of it back then too, it was looser. So when I came across in May, it was looser than it is now. So now the kind of guideline I fell underneath, so they took that parameter out. So I think it's gotten tougher now. But ultimately, I was able to get across and I came out of that waiting room and it felt so oppressive in there because I thought I was going to get turned around. And when I came out, it was the most friendly people I'd ever seen. They're like, welcome to Canada. And I'm like, oh, this is a change.
And your partner, you know, Magpie, who's there kind of sitting and waiting and waiting and waiting, mm-hmm. was probably so relieved as well.
Yes, I was texting her the entire time I was in there being like, I'm in here for 2 hours. They keep trying to turn me back. And it was such a feeling that it's just not comparable. I mean, we got in the car and we're like, okay, let's go. Let's get settled. And it was such a feeling.
And then after, that's when you did the GDT.
Yeah. Right? So, okay. Well, I had to quarantine for 14 days.
Okay. Yeah.
Of international travel. So my first experience in Canada was getting home and not leaving the home for 14 days. And there was just a bunch of kind of enjoying each other's time. We hadn't seen each other for 5-6 months. And that was a big part. And then we also were getting more into the planning stages of the GDT. So that's after the quarantine is when we went out and did the GDT.
And you had mentioned when you were corresponding with me that one of the trails you have your eye on is the North Country Trail.
It is. Yeah. I listened to your interview. Yes.
So that's like 5,000 miles. And mm-hmm. it's a tough to through hike this. I mean, just mm-hmm. because of the time it takes to do it. And then I think just seasonally, I mean, yes. going to, it's North Dakota, right? You know, mm-hmm. so what are you trying to do? And I guess, how are you trying to plan for taking on that endeavor?
Oh, kind of how we plan other long distance hikes is you figure out a lot along the way. You look at key places for resupply. So if you know the North Country Trail, if you know that there's going to be a big section, you might look at that section more in depth. But a lot of it is going to be GPX routes we're going to have to create on a map system as well. But a lot of that planning is just knowing that we can hold a pace and figuring out the next section as we go. We'll have an overview map on the GPX, but especially with these lesser ground truth trails, a lot of the times you have to make game time decisions of that trail is actually not here. Like on the map system, it might look like it, but it's not here. Like on the Vancouver Island Trail, their GPX route did not coincide with what was actually there. And I don't think that's the case with the NCT, but we're going to have an overview and we have the guidebooks and it's just going to be a lot of planning of what that looks like. And we're both comfortable with holding higher mile days. So we know we'll be able to get in that time window. As of it looks right now, 2021, I'll do 3 trails beforehand and then go to the NCT, and Magpie and I will do the NCT together.
Okay. So what are the trails that you're going to tackle before that?
This is all like current conditions permitting.
Of course. And plans do change, as we know.
Yeah. So I want to be able to run out the Florida Trail in February. And that would lead me into the next two. I don't know how much I want to touch on those two yet. I kind of want to leave a mystery.
All right. We'll leave it with the Florida Trail, which is, mm-hmm. is a good winter trail to do.
Yeah.
But for the NCT and mm-hmm. thinking about that endeavor, are you looking at from Vermont?
Yes.
Okay.
We would be going westbound. So that time window, if we started in beginning of May, maybe tail end of April, we think we would be able to average at least 30 miles a day, because a lot of the country, once you get out of that eastbound section, is relatively flat. So we're both very comfortable doing, like I was saying, 35s upwards some days. So you factor in a couple Neros here and a couple zero days, and I think our average would stay right around 30. So we would be able to do it in about a 4 or 5 month time window. And that would bring us May, June, July, August, end of September, we would be able to finish, maybe a little bit earlier.
And I think it's really like only a handful have done it as a through hike. And not many.
Yes. I know there's a website out there. You actually touched on it in your interview. Yeah. I just can't recollect what that website is right now. But
North
that
Country
shows
Trail Association.
Yeah, they'll have a link to a woman that runs the current through hiker list, I believe. And yeah, I believe it's 10 or 11. And Magpie will become the first Canadian woman to have through hiked that trail, which is pretty sweet.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Also, as part of that, I guess you could look at FKT.
Yeah, I'm really bad at registering them. I think
as long as you say that you're going to do it at some point, and you make it known, right? I think that's
I think the Ice Age Trail might have been a self-supported one, but I'm bad at registering them. I know. I did set an FKT on the Sea to Sky Trail, which was the most recent trail I did.
Okay. What's the Sea to Sky Trail? So people who may not know.
Oh, okay. So it's in British Columbia, Canada, and it's 120 miles about. And it starts in the town of Squamish, which literally starts at the harbor. And it goes to the quote-unquote town of Darcy, which is more of a very small community. And through there, you kind of go bounce around in the mountains near Whistler. About half of it is trail right now, and then half of it is road. They're still trying to develop from Pemberton northbound to Darcy. So, yeah, it's about 120 miles. It has beautiful mountains that you get to climb up into. And I did that in 52 hours and 55 minutes. So I wanted to do a speed record, a yo-yo. But when I got to Darcy, that's when all that fire about 2 weeks ago, all that smoke came up to Canada, and the last day on trail, I was just choking on smoke, and I'm like, it's not worth trying to run back through this. So
yeah, you don't want to be miserable. And I mean, that's just not good for your lungs.
Yeah. I when I was coming through Pemberton, actually, because the trail comes right through it, I called a buddy.
Home.
I'm like, hey, yeah. I didn't want that kind of pull. So I try to distance myself from that. But I called a buddy and I'm like, hey, can you check the air quality in Pemberton right now? And it was really bad air quality, and I'd been tasting it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to finish the northbound through hike, but I'm not going to yo-yo it.
Okay. And so all this while, you're also trying to balance this company and this, you know, the clothing that you're trying to put out there. So do you have right now, are you selling it online? What's the company name, I guess, first?
The company name is 11 Skies, based off of the 11 National Scenic Trails. The Skies is spelled SKYS.
Okay.
People like to tease me that I made a mistake in the spelling, but I thought it was creative. So it's 11skies.com right now, where I'm selling mostly through an online platform. And yeah, you can buy gear through there right now. And that's kind of the gist of where it is.
You're also doing YouTube videos. So you're also doing videos of your hikes now. Tell me more about that. And is that something you're continuing to do? Was it just kind of a hobby? What's the story?
It started off as kind of a hobby. It started off because I filmed the AT. I filmed all my quote-unquote through hikes. Not so much day hikes and section hikes. I don't really film that, but it started off as kind of just something to look back on, and YouTube was a place that I could upload footage and I could erase my memory card so I didn't have to keep buying more memory cards. And from there, it became, as we're doing more and more of these lesser known trails, it became more about giving as much information as possible to other hikers that are coming in our footsteps, or other hikers that are looking into it, or bringing more recognition to these smaller known trails. Like, especially the Ice Age Trail, I was a lot of the time on trail and locals would be like, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, the trail runs right through here. And they'd live there 30 plus years and didn't know there's a trail right there. So it's trying to give as much information as possible to people that are looking into these lesser known trails, and also just, yeah, bring more awareness around them.
So how can people watch the videos?
They can go to YouTube and type in Hiking America. It's all one word. Somebody has the Hiking Space America. This one's just all one word. Be prepared though, because super long. A lot of my footage for even a section sometimes can be like 2 hours. So super, super long, but it once again ties into as much information as possible. Like for a trail system, like the VIT, the Vancouver Island Trail, that just got designated in June 2020. And we completed that this year, and there's barely any information out there. So it's really compact with what to do here, what to do there, water sources. It's also filled with my rambling sometimes, but...
Well, I think, I mean, people are very hungry for information, so that's good, especially on lesser known trails. And that's the place to do it, right? To share it somewhere online where you can feed off of it with each other, add more, and take that information back. So I know that would be good for anyone. You've done a lot of different trails, so you have a lot of content out there to go through. So sure. Anyone who's looking for a trail is probably likely going to find something that they can look at. You know, now that you've had 5 years of experience in hiking, 5+, for someone who's new to hiking and just starting out, I mean, there's something to be said about everyone needs to make their own mistakes, because that's how we learn.
Definitely. But
what advice, or what are some of the things that you would say to someone who's maybe looking at 2021 as being the year that they, you know, do a long trail?
Yeah. It's going to sound cliche. Take the first step. That's really, it's very cliche, but if you're planning 2021, current conditions, get out there, and also don't worry about weight. Within these past 5 years, I've seen a lot of the hiking kind of shift to be like, oh, we got to go ultralight, ultralight, ultralight. Ultralight's great, but as a starting hiker, it might not be great because it's going to be uncomfortable. Ultralight's built to kind of push you farther, push you faster. It's not really built for ultra comfort. And if you go out there and try to go way too light, way too fast, you might come away with a bad experience. So don't worry about the weight. Don't go super heavy. Don't go super heavy, but also do what makes you comfortable. If you want to carry that jet boil because you know how to cook with the jet boil, do that. I mean, it's going to work, and you're going to pick up bits and pieces from other people that you're camping around, or other trail towns that you're coming through, or the community itself is going to suggest, hey, this might work better, this might not. And you get to experience it for what it is. And you get to try that and see it in action instead of having to put so much worry about, I need exactly this, I need exactly that. So don't worry about the weight so much. And I know a lot of people in the hiking community are going to not agree with that, but I think for beginner backpackers, just go out and have fun. I mean, that's what it's about, really. Just go out and enjoy a trail system.
Do you still take hot sauce with you on the trail?
I do. A lot of hot sauce. Not glass bottles anymore, though. Okay.
All right. So what's your favorite hot sauce?
For the trail, sriracha, because you can find it in the small squeeze bottles in the most places. If I had a preference, I would probably do Texas Pete more often, but then you have to transfer from glass to plastic and you might not have that plastic bottle and it becomes a full headache.
How can the listeners connect with you? Where's the best way that they can follow your adventures?
It would be either our company website, 11 Skies, because you can directly message me through there, and then also YouTube as well, Hike in America. And you can also directly leave comments there, message me. And yeah, if you want to pick a hiker's brain or talk about gear or talk about trails, I love talking. So anywhere through there.
Ryan, I've really appreciated your time today.
Yeah. Thank you.
I mean,
so
just
much.
All the different trails that you've hiked. Definitely, I want to be on all of them right at this moment. But you know, it's not always possible. But thanks for sharing, and I'll put links in the show notes to your company or YouTube channel, and so that the listeners can connect with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for doing these types of podcasts. Anything trail related, I can't get enough of.
So thank you so much, Ryan, for being on the show and sharing all of your stories and experiences. And I really encourage anyone who's thinking about hiking a long trail to go out to Hiking America on YouTube, check out his videos, and reach out to him. Ryan would love to share some of his knowledge. And like he said, you know, you can pick his brain. And I received some 11 Skies shorts in Midnight. They have a couple different colors. I like the midnight. I'm excited to try them out and wear them, you know, with some tights for winter, and then have them on the trail when it comes to next season. And I'll be keeping you posted on, you know, how they're working out for me. Check the show notes for links to 11 Skies and to Ryan's YouTube channel. And you can let me know what you're thinking about the show by reaching out at The Hike Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or hikepodcast@gmail.com. So until next time, see you on the trail.